We are in Daniel chapter 3. Somebody summarize Daniel chapters 1 and 2 for me. Somebody other than Nathan, summarize Daniel chapter 1 and 2 for me.
Chapter 1, they took a bunch of people from other places to see how they to train them, basically.
They took smart people.
Yes.
Good. Yeah.
And there were 4 of them. And they got new names. I'm not very good at explaining this.
Mishael,
good.
Azariah, and...
Hananiah.
And Daniel.
So. Got names, Belteshazzar.
Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego.
Which we're going to see today.
Is it Abednego or Abednego?
It's actually Abednego.
Abednego.
Chris is going to say it.
You could also say Abednego.
That's too good. Abednego.
Okay, so yeah, like 4 people were taken from Judah.
Mm-hmm.
We're kind of talking about them.
And then they were like, we don't want your food.
And they were like, we don't want your food. Good.
So then they just ate vegetables and water and then ended up being stronger than the other people.
Yeah. Nice. Alright, so what happened in chapter 2?
And then the king had a dream.
What did he?
He wanted to know. He wanted someone to interpret it, but he wouldn't tell them what it was.
All right.
He wanted them to tell him what his dream was, and then
interpret it.
And they couldn't. So who shows up to do that?
Daniel.
And he prayed about it. And then he told the others about it to pray.
Yeah.
And then he went and interpreted the dream.
Yeah.
Hallelujah.
So what was the dream, and what was its interpretation?
Lots of fancy things.
Lots of gold and silver and bronze.
And iron and pottery and...
Yeah.
A large statue made out of all of those things.
Good.
And then each represented different kingdoms.
Right. What 4 kingdoms are pretty clearly represented?
Good question. Let me look that, pull out my...
Trusty notes, that's good.
Notes,
yeah.
For last week.
Notes are good.
Greece, Rome, Medio Persia,
Babylon. Yeah. Babylon gets overtaken by Medo Persia. Medo Persia gets overtaken by
Greece
with Alexander the Great. And then Greece gets overtaken by
Rome.
And then
Rome
I gave you.
Overtaken by.
Rome gets overtaken by history, kind of. The Goths, the Visigoths, all of the Roman bands. It deteriorates over 500 years.
Just falls apart.
It has to keep going.
Yeah, and I gave you the futurist interpretation. It says the feet part iron, part clay, as a yet future
nation.
As we get further along, we'll see more evidence of why that's a fair interpretation. Particularly when we get to chapter 7. We're not there yet. Good, and then what does the king do as a result of Daniel interpreting the dream for him?
He made him in charge of people.
Yeah, he promotes him.
In charge of all his wise men.
Gives him good food.
Yeah.
And then Daniel requested that he appoint Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego as well.
Abednego.
Yeah, they become... kind of leaders of a province of Babylon. Daniel, though, remained in the king's court.
Yes.
All right, we get to chapter 3. And starts out, Nebuchadnezzar, the king, made an image of gold. Not good thing to do. Pretty much almost any time in the Bible, it says somebody made an image of gold. It's a bad time. Think back to when in Israel's history have we seen images of gold? Do any particular events pop in your mind?
Was there like a calf
Yeah, golden calf. Right, Exodus 32. Aaron sitting there like, yeah, threw in the gold, and then out came this calf, and so we worshipped it.
How did that get here?
Yeah.
We thought you were dead.
One of the worst blame game excuses for sin in the Bible.
Not very imaginative.
Yeah. The reason that Israel is in captivity is because over and over and over again they were worshiping idols. So this is like the ultimate test. You're in exile because you're worshiping because of all your idol worship, and the king in exile tells you to worship an idol. What are you going to do? Right. This is a very jarring, very like, all right, first major test for the people of Israel in Babylonian exile. They're specifically being told, worship something other than Yahweh. And that's why they're in Babylon in the first place, because they've been worshiping things other than Yahweh. So that's kind of the backdrop of this. Remember also, always remember, what is the main point of the book of Daniel? It gets explained in one of the first few verses. What is the main point of the book of Daniel? What is the book of Daniel proving?
Verse 2.
Yeah, there you go. God's ultimately in charge of this. He is bigger, mightier, and stronger than the gods of all the other nations. Babylon in the first 5 chapters, Persia, Media in the last 7, and every other nation that comes along. The whole point is, God is in control. He sets up rulers, takes down rulers. He is bigger, better, badder than anybody else you're going to put up against him. So that's verse 2. The Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into Nebuchadnezzar's hand. First 4 chapters are all showing how Nebuchadnezzar gets humbled, how Nebuchadnezzar gets taken down a peg. So chapter 3 is the beginning of one of those big... Nebuchadnezzar is trying to put himself up a peg, and we'll see how that works out for him. So I'm going to read chapter 3, verses 1 through 7.
Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold, the height of which was 60 cubits, and its width 6 cubits. He set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king sent word to assemble the satraps, the prefects and the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, and all the other rulers of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. Then the satraps, the prefects, and the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, and the magistrates, and all the rulers of the provinces. Why couldn't they just say they?
Good question. Good interpretive question. Why do they list them all instead of just saying they?
I wanted to make sure that you didn't interpret it any other way.
Yeah, keep going.
Pronouns are killer.
They really are. Let's see. A symbol for the dedication of the image that the Nebuchadnezzar had set up, and they stood before the image that he'd set up. Then they... Herald loudly proclaimed, "To you the command is given, O peoples, nations, and men of every language, that at the moment you hear the sound of the horn, flute, lyre, trigon, psaltery, bagpipe, and all kinds of music, you are to fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king has set up. But whoever does not fall down and worship shall immediately be cast into the midst of a furnace of blazing fire. Therefore, at that time, when all the people heard the sound of the horn, flute, lyre, trigon, psaltery, bagpipe, and all kinds of music, all the peoples, nations, and men of every language fell down and worshipped the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up."
All right. So make sure we get firmly get a picture in our minds of exactly what's happening. Because the way this story gets told, a lot of times little things will sneak in that maybe the text doesn't actually say. So, few words to pull out. Repetition. Did you guys notice any particular phrases that got repeated?
I didn't notice anything.
One thing was the repetition of every kind of official, right?
Yeah.
And then every kind of musical instrument. That was one. There's a particular phrase that gets repeated at least 3 or 4 times.
Nebuchadnezzar the king
had
set
erected.
Had erected is what the NET says. I like that.
It just says made.
Yeah, made is at the beginning, but then every other time it's the Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. The image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. More literal translation, erected is a good one. It's Nebuchadnezzar the king had caused to arise.
Hmm.
That's why I like erected, caused to rise up.
You literally put the ropes around his back and pulled it up.
It's the same word at the beginning of Jonah, when Jonah, the word of the Lord came to Jonah the prophet, and God said, "Arise, go to Nineveh." And Jonah arose and went to Tarshish. Same word, caused to arise. Okay, we're going to see this. The different movement verbs are interesting all throughout this chapter. So, caused to arise is one of them. The other thing, what's the instruction that the herald gives? First of all, who does he give it to? And that's in verse 4.
Peoples, nations, and languages.
Yeah.
So pretty much everybody.
Yeah, it's men of every peoples, nations, languages. So, in this group of various officials, satraps, prefects, governors, counselors, treasurers, justices, magistrates, and all the officials, are people of various nations and languages. Who do we know, based on the context of chapters 1 and 2, are included in this group of peoples, nations, languages?
The Jews.
Yes. Jews are in here.
This is his domain, like everybody in the land that he's conquered.
Everyone that he's conquered. Assyrians, Jews, Israelites, Egyptians, other smaller people groups, Akkadians, everybody. There are some of those in these officials of the nations. Daniel and his three friends are not the only Jews who are around. There are Jews here in this group other than those three. Or those four. Now, it says that the satraps, prefects, they all gathered for the dedication of the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Where are they gathering?
At the statue.
The statue. Where's the statue?
The plains of Dura.
Plains of Dura, yeah. Dur means rampart. Most likely, don't know exactly where the plains of Dura is, but most likely, you've got the city of Babylon. Ancient cities are usually built on hills. Walls around them. This is for defense purposes. You get the high ground, you build a wall. Anybody trying to attack your city, everybody gets inside the wall. You get on the walls and you fight. You know what ramparts are, right?
Only from the song.
The ramparts we watch, so gallantly stream.
The ramparts are essentially the walls. The places where you're archers and your soldiers can stand on the top of the wall with cover. Think of castle walls, like the little notches things.
Yeah.
You can hide behind the notch and then just pop out and shoot an arrow and pop back in for cover. Yeah, like that.
Ramparts right here.
Ramparts are your defense walls. So the plains of the ramparts, the plains of Dura, are the plains that are right outside your walls. It's the entrance to your city. So this golden image is out there welcoming anyone who comes into Babylon, and it is how big?
90 feet tall, 9 feet wide.
90 feet tall and 9 feet wide. Does that actually render it? It actually change it? That bugs me. But what are the original measurements?
60 cubits high and 6 cubits wide.
Now, this might be reading into it a little bit, but I thought this was interesting. They're a common... I don't like to get too much into numerology with the Bible, but there are some numbers that are significant in the Bible. Can you think of any that are significant in the Bible?
7, 40. 7, 40.
3. 3. 6.
Six. I'm thinking of one other big one.
5, 7, 4, 3, 2, 12. 12.
Right, 12 it's tribes.
12. It's 12.
No,
we've been doing that for a long time.
Those are all of them, but in particular, 6 and 7 are the ones that are in view right here, right? 6 is commonly thought of as the number of man, created on the sixth day, slightly less than God, whose number is
7. 7.
7 spirits of God rested on the 7th day, 7 days of creation, etc. So the fact that Nebuchadnezzar, his statue is 6 cubits by 60 cubits, it's...
ultimate man.
Yeah, the ultimate man. This is the best man can do. I kind of like that the commentator that pointed that out. It's like, this is the number of the beast, 666, trinity of man's number as opposed to God's number. I think there might be something to that.
This is how much of a dude I am.
Yeah.
My statue's 60 times 6.
Yeah. Yeah, how big is yours? Mine is 60 by 6.
My answer's big enough.
Bigger than yours.
And realize that's huge. 90 feet, that's about 9 stories. Right?
And it's gold.
And it's gold.
I wish I could get my hands on that statue.
He took the whole you are the gold in the statue. A little too serious.
Yeah. Where did he get this idea? Well, from
the head of gold.
Chapter 2. He's the head of gold. I am gold. I'm the best. The next nations that are going to come after me are going to be silver, bronze.
Yeah. Statue if I were him too.
Look how awesome I am. And God said so, right? He's the one who gave me the vision. So
you get sort of led into this.
Yeah, I'm going to set up. Yeah, I'm going to set up the statue.
The one that gave you the power.
I'm not there yet. He hasn't figured that part out yet.
But yeah, the image that he had set up had caused to arise, and then he tells everyone. What does he tell them to do?
Bow down to it.
Yeah. In particular, again, the word for bow down there, fall down, nafal, fall. We're going to see the word fall repeated a couple times throughout this passage. At least in the Aramaic. Sometimes you'll lose it in the translation. But fall down and worship the thing that the king has caused to arise. So, fall down, arise. Right? You guys fall down, worship what the king has caused to arise. Remember that picture. What's the punishment if they refuse to do this thing?
A burning fiery furnace. It's emphasizing the burning part.
Yeah, you'll be cast into a burning fiery furnace. Again, another motion verb. Cast, pushed. Yeah. Same. Anastasia.
The
music
in
Anastasia is
one
of my favorites. So all the people who did gather, as soon as they're there, verse 7, as soon as all the people heard the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, etc., the peoples of the nations fell down, worshipped the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar had caused to arise. Everybody who showed up did it. So let me ask you a question. Are Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego there?
Probably. Are they there in this announcement?
Yeah.
Well, they are set up as over the affairs of the provinces.
Yeah.
I would imagine if he called all of his high officials, all the officials to show up, that they would have been there. And
maybe,
Daniel.
It doesn't say.
So yeah, there seems to be, let's see. Using what we know of the passage ahead, because we read it before, we know that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego refused to do this, right? So, we've got either they showed up because of the verse that says all of the satraps, prefects, governors, etc. showed up, which means they're one of those groups and they showed up, or verse 7, which says everybody who's there fell down and worshipped, which means they weren't there because we know that they didn't worship, right? So which one is it? I want you to try and draw out that answer from the text as we keep going. But verses 8 through 12. Let me read those.
Now at that time, certain Chaldeans came forward and brought malicious accusations against the Jews. They said to King Nebuchadnezzar, "O king, live forever. You have issued an edict, O king, that everyone must bow down and pay homage to the golden statue when they hear the sound of horn, flute, zither, trigon, harp, pipes, and all kinds of music. And whoever does not bow down and pay homage must be thrown into the midst of a furnace of blazing fire. But there are Jewish men whom you appointed over administration of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and these men have not shown proper respect to you, O king. They don't serve your gods, and they don't pay homage to the golden statue that you have erected."
So what do you think? Were they there or not? I tend to think that they weren't there.
It doesn't say they didn't.
Yeah. I tend to think that they weren't there. Particularly because of the phrase in verse 12. "These men, O king, disregard you," would be a literal translation. "Pay no attention to you. These guys haven't even listened to your announcement to everybody go see the statue in the first place. They completely disregard what you're saying." Which makes me think they got told, "Oh yeah, we're building a statue," and they said, "Oh, all right, well, we're not going to be involved in that," as they rightly should have. The other Jews, who are probably governors in this group, are not being targeted by these Chaldeans. There's a phrase in here at the very beginning, verse 8. "Therefore, at that certain time, Chaldeans came forward and maliciously accused the Jews." You guys have different translations of that. What do you have for there?
Brought charges
against the Jews. What did you say, Nathan? Net?
Malicious accusations.
Malicious accusations.
Maybe Holman Christian Standard Bible. Yep. And it says maliciously accused, but there's also a note that says, "literally, and eat the pieces of."
Yes.
What? Nice.
Yeah, it's an idiom.
You're like picking them apart.
Yeah, it's literally, like, we might use the phrase "ripped to shreds." Mm-hmm. They are specifically targeting Jews, and they are trying to destroy them.
Didn't one of these Jews save them from dying earlier?
Yes. These are the same guys. The Chaldeans, the ones who you know, couldn't interpret the dream and were supposed to be torn limb from limb and have their houses burned to rubble.
But Daniel's not mentioned.
This guy kept us from dying. He showed us up.
Let's kill him.
Let's kill his friends.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because he's not listed in this.
These
story, apparently.
Daniel, we don't know where Daniel is. There's lots of proposed explanations of what Daniel's doing during this whole chapter. None of them are conclusive. I think the best explanation I've heard is that since he's part of the king's court, he's away on foreign business. Nebuchadnezzar's got a huge empire to run, and Daniel's off being a diplomat. But the Chaldeans are specifically targeting these three guys, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego.
The D is before the N.
Sorry?
The D is before the N.
Abednego. Yes, Abednego. They came forward and ate the pieces of the Jews, is the literal translation. They start out with their usual buttering up wishes of eternal life, which they cannot offer. O king, live forever.
What they're supposed to
do. Yeah.
That's just all kings.
That's how they do it. Deny Genesis chapter 3 as much as you can. O king, live forever. Forget that curse about death and all that.
Because we don't know that.
Yeah. you're so great, you shouldn't be subject to that, like every other human. Certain Jews...
But is it like an eternal life thing, or is it like a historical thing? They're saying, may your legacy be passed down through the ages, or like a... May you...
Quite often, particularly in ancient Near East cultures, it's a literal have eternal life thing. It's a.
Do you guys want more air conditioning? Is it getting hot?
It's a little. I'm a little warm.
Thanks.
Quite
often in ancient Near East, it's a literal okay, have eternal life. It's often the leaders of these nations are treated as deity. They're supposed to be gods on earth. So it's a wish to overcome death in a fairly literal sense.
Or Trump, may you live forever.
Whoa.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is that in the back of their minds, they all know
it
ain't happening. Not one king has ever done this, that they're all.
But if we want
wishing.
To ask something, we should probably say these things.
Yeah.
It's like your parent.
Your king made a decree that anybody who hears this music should fall down, worship the golden image. Whoever does not fall down will be cast into a burning furnace. Just reminding you, this is what you did. There's three particular Jews who are doing this, O king. They're disregarding you. They do not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. You did this great thing, and they are disregarding you. It's going to get even more personal for Nebuchadnezzar in a little bit.
Mm-mm.
So, this is the situation. What does Nebuchadnezzar do? 13 through 15.
Nebuchadnezzar, in rage and anger, gave orders to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Then these men were brought before the king. Nebuchadnezzar responded and said to them, "Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the golden image that I have set up? Now, if you are ready, at the moment you hear the sound of the horn, flute, lyre, trigon, psaltery, and bagpipe, and all kinds of music, to fall down and worship the image that I have made, very well, but if you do not worship, you will be immediately cast into the midst of a furnace and blazing fire. And what god is there who can deliver you out of my hands?"
All right. What is Nebuchadnezzar's reaction?
He's pissed.
Yeah. Full of rage, furious anger. Wrath is the literal word. Very much the exact same word as wrath of God, sort of wrath. When God says to the people, "My wrath burns against you," and he dishes out some kind of a punishment. Exact same word, exact same phrase. That Daniel's being very intentional drawing this out. Nebuchadnezzar's wrath burned against them. So we're about to see the extent of Nebuchadnezzar's wrath. What can this earthly king's wrath do? How does it compare to God's wrath? Is the contrast he's drawing.
Will it be carried through?
Yeah.
Find out next time.
Daniel 3.
That's the... It says it twice.
Quiet.
Verse 13 and verse 15. Gave orders to bring him down again. There's a little bit of a weird phrase in here. Now, if you are ready, he starts out like his wrath is burning, and yet at the same time, is it true that this is what's going on? If you're ready,
it's like your last, here's your chance.
Go ahead and do it. Fall down, worship the image that I have made. By the way, well and good, or very well, isn't in the original text. If you're ready, fall down and worship the image I have made. But if not, you'll be immediately cast into the burning fiery furnace.
Real quick.
Yeah.
I'm a little confused on where 13 and 15 come in. Mine only goes to 12. I don't know, maybe just because this is the version?
Let me see.
That's not... I bought that book on commentary when I was in jail, so might be a bit out.
Yeah, that'd be, 'cause I don't know of any textual variant that would make.
It's like you have to get out of jail to find out what happened.
No, that's there. 13 through 15. They're on the far left, far right column.
Oh.
What?
Yeah, I knew that.
Okay. It's not good.
No,
I'm just testing you.
Yeah.
And you passed.
Right.
This time.
Well, no, I thought I was confused because it's like, it's got 1, 2, 3, and it goes all the way up to 12, but like the big numbers over here, I'm looking at the little ones on the side of the paragraph.
Gotcha.
That's what I wasn't paying attention to.
Yeah. And big numbers chapter, and then the little numbers are the verses inside that chapter.
Oh.
And then it goes, you go each column, 1, 2,
oh,
3,
okay.
4.
Got it.
Which, and actually, King James is so hard to read. I got other Bibles that you can have that are easier translations. That I'll give you one.
Actually, yeah. I understand this one pretty well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, I have a good brain, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Whatever.
Like the B's and the vowels and the there's.
Yeah, actually, yeah.
I love it.
Makes it more majestic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It does.
All right. Where were we?
Well, again, it's not in the text.
Yeah, well, it's not in the text, but that's okay. But if you do not worship, you shall immediately be cast to burning fiery furnace. And what does he ask? Who is the God who will deliver you out of whose hands? My hands.
God is there.
So, very much a direct contrast of my wrath. What God can save you from? My wrath. My anger. My hand. Look how powerful and great I am.
It's almost like he thinks his wrath is just.
Yeah.
Like he makes the rules.
Yeah. And that's what, good. Those two things. Verse 15 is like the perfect outworking of the fall of Genesis 3. Read verse 15 again. Now, if you are ready, when you hear the sound of the harp, one lyre, fall down to worship the image that I have made. So, I made it. Worship it. Me. Me, me, me.
Me, me, me.
I'm in charge. I create. And how, I mean, seriously, think about that phrase. Fall down and worship the image that I have made. You literally just finished creating something, and you want to worship it as God, and you want other people to do the same. How stupid is that? You literally just got finished making it. It's not even like you came across something that was incomprehensible to you, and you thought, this is wondrous. I am baffled by how amazing this is. I will worship it. It's like, you just got finished creating the thing. You are obviously worshiping yourself.
Yeah.
You are obviously worshiping yourself.
Look at my craftsmanship. It looks just like the king.
Yeah. And it's this, and it's kind of like the modern day version of the humble brag. It's like, worship this thing that I made. This thing, worship it that I made. Right? Like, no, the focus is on the image, but then it slips, right?
Worship this book. I translated it. This
yeah.
book.
The.
Did I tell you I translated?
Did I tell you I made this thing? It's mine.
Who is the God who delivered
you
out of
your own two hands?
I made it.
My hands. He lets it slip. Who is the God who will deliver you out of my hands? The reality of the situation, kind of.
Escapes him. The irony of the
slips
situation.
In.
Escapes him.
Yeah.
Yep.
So he finishes with this question. Who is the God who will deliver you out of my hands? And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego respond. Shadrach, verse 16. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If this be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand. O king. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up, that you have caused to arise. We're not going to do it. Two things here. First of all, how do they answer the question, who is the God who will deliver you out of my hands?
They don't.
Yeah, they don't. They say...
You don't need to answer your childish questions.
No, need to answer that question. Why is there no need to answer that question?
Because they weren't going to praise the statue.
Because they weren't going to
put a statue. Anyways.
It seems like this is a prime opportunity to preach to God Yahweh, though, right? Like, so why don't they do that?
Was not meant to be. I don't know.
It's not meant to be.
Heart is too hard.
His heart is too hard.
I think it
keep thinking.
Good.
Just think of the actual question and answer. Think of it in terms of let me throw it. If Nebuchadnezzar had asked the question, what is 2 + 2? What would Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego say? Yeah, maybe it's a rhetorical question. I'm kind of getting at Nebuchadnezzar already knows the answer to his question. Who is the God? He's been shown the God. He just got done having a vision that Daniel specifically preached the God Yahweh to him in chapter 2.
So it's like a show me the God sort of thing. Like, this one guy showed me him earlier. But now you're going to say you worship the same guy. So show me that guy again.
Yeah, and they're like, look, you've already heard the message. You already know it. It's up to you to submit.
Kind of reminds me of when Jesus tells the devil that he even quotes the Bible, says, you know, they'll test the Lord. Like, we know what you're doing here.
Yeah,
we're not gonna play this game with you.
What's more is also
we won't do it anyway.
With Romans, he knows it even without Daniel having preached it. Romans says all men know God. The truth of God has been plainly revealed to all men, namely his divine nature, heavenly attributes, and they reject the God. They suppress the truth in their hearts and unrighteousness. So Nebuchadnezzar knows the answer to his question, who is the God who will deliver you out of my hands? He's just trying to, straight out of Genesis 3, be God instead of letting God be God. I think that's why they don't answer. Because, one, they've already answered this question before. They know that he knows for two different reasons. Because everybody knows, and because they've specifically already talked about the God who reveals mysteries, who is the God of heaven. And Nebuchadnezzar just got finished saying in chapter 2, oh yeah, this God is amazing, but he still didn't get it. Second part of their answer. Verse 17. If this be so, as in, if you're going to throw us in the fire furnace, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace. Notice the change here. And he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. That is a very specific change, also reflected in the original language. First statement, God is able to deliver us from the fiery furnace, as in statement of possibility, probability. Second statement is a statement of literal future fact. He will deliver us out of your hand. Why the distinction?
Because they're not guaranteed that, it's not guaranteed that he will remove them from fire. Hell, I mean, they could be burned to death.
Correct.
But
so how will they be delivered from his hand?
Nebuchadnezzar will not reign over them in the afterlife.
There you go. Confident expectation of resurrection in that sentence. When we're resurrected, we're going to be in God's hand, not yours. He will deliver us out of your hand. Gospel's preached right there. Albeit in a veiled sense.
Fresh.
But, he's able to save us from the fire, but he will definitely take us out of your hands, either by this fire or by some other means. You're not going to win in the end. Our God is bigger than you. And then they clarify, and if not, if he doesn't save us from the fire, not going to serve your God, not going to worship the golden image that you have arisen. You have caused your
own. So regardless of what happens.
Regardless of what happens.
Anyway.
Yeah. We are confident in our expectation of the resurrection. So, go ahead, kill us. Where am I in my notes? Alright. Why aren't they going to serve his gods or worship the golden image that's caused to arise? Why this big fuss? Why not just worship the image? This is one of those. Well, it's not a trick question.
What? I just never know.
Why the big fuss? Why not just worship the image?
Because it's not an image. It's bad.
Yeah. Well, why is it bad?
So I said so. Because Israel made a promise that they would worship no other god, and that's what got them in this mess.
There you go. Their history is quite clear. You know, Israel's not supposed to worship other gods. How can you validate that assertion, though? Well, you go find the places in the text where Israel was instructed not to worship other gods. For example, I'll give you one. Deuteronomy 5, 8, and 9. Specifically, the address is what they say. Deuteronomy 5, 8, and 9. God's speaking. He's speaking to Israel. He says, "You shall not make for yourself a carved image of any likeness, of anything that is in heaven above, or that is on the earth below, or that is in water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them or serve them. For I am the Lord your God. I am jealous God, visiting the iniquity of your fathers on the children to the third and fourth generations, to those who hate me." So very specifically, shall not bow down to images, shall not serve them. So Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are God-fearing Jews. They know the law. They know specifically this is something we're not supposed to do. And yes, there are plenty of other times where all throughout the law and all throughout history, the nation of Israel says, we're not supposed to be following. We're not supposed to be worshiping idols. Just always good practice to, when you know something's true, but you're not quite sure where, go find the specific place in God's Word where it says that. And if you can't, question the presupposition that God's Word says that. That aside. So, what is Nebuchadnezzar's reaction to this brazen answer from Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Verses
filled with wrath.
Somebody got verses 19 through 26, 27.
Then Nebuchadnezzar was furious with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and his attitude toward them changed. He ordered the furnace heated 7 times hotter than usual, and commanded some of the strongest soldiers in his army to tie up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and throw them into the blazing furnace. So these men, wearing their robes, trousers, turbans, and other clothes, were bound and thrown into the blazing furnace. The king's command was so urgent, and the furnace so hot, and the flames of the fire killed the soldiers who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and these 3 men firmly tied fell into the blazing furnace. Then King Nebuchadnezzar leaped to his feet in amazement and asked his advisors, "Weren't there 3 men that we tied up there, that we tied up and threw into the fire?" They replied, "Certainly, Your Majesty." He said, "Look, I see 4 men walking around in the fire, unbound and unharmed, and the 4th looks like a son of the gods." Nebuchadnezzar then approached the opening of the blazing furnace and shouted, the suspense, "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out, come here." Is that it? Or do you want me to read? So Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out of the fire, and the satraps, prefects, governors, and royal advisors crowded around them. They saw that the fire had not harmed their bodies, nor was a hair of their heads singed. Their robes were not scorched, and there was no smell of fire on them.
All right. Go through this piece by piece. What's Nebuchadnezzar's reaction again?
Furious.
Again, the same word, wrath. The wrath of Nebuchadnezzar was kindled. We're going to see his wrath. What is his wrath? I also like ESV renders it, the expression of his face changed. What does Net say there? Verse 19.
Nebuchadnezzar was filled with rage. And his disposition changed.
His disposition changed.
Altered.
It's a little bit the view of his two faces switched. It's the really literal. Boom, two face. He was smiling, saying, "Why don't you just do this? Who's the guy who can save you?"
And a real man.
Yeah, a real man. He ordered the furnace be heated 1 and 7 times over that which it is usually heated. 7 times hotter than usual. This is his wrath, right? We're about to see the full extent of what Nebuchadnezzar's wrath can accomplish. 7 times hotter than usual. Ordered some of the mightiest men of his army. Right? This is the full extent of his wrath. The strongest guys he's got. Bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Throw them in the furnace. Cloaks, tunics, hats, and all. Flammable things, right? That's the point of why they go through all... All of these things that should be burning up pretty darn quick are being thrown in the furnace with them. And what gets burned up first?
The men who were about to throw them in there?
The men who threw them in there. best laid plans of mice and men, right? The Nebuchadnezzar's wrath harms only himself.
Mm-hmm.
Rather, his own power. He is his own destruction. That sort of twist. All that his wrath accomplishes is he weakens his own power.
Because those are his strongest men.
Those are his strongest men, and he lost them.
Strong men.
In an attempt to show his strength against the God Yahweh.
Sounds like what happens when you get mad.
Yeah.
You do stupid things.
The wrath of Nebuchadnezzar versus the wrath of God. Which one's going to win?
Spoilers.
Flame of the fire slew those men who carried Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And then verse 24. I like this verse. So, King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished and arose. Same word as caused to arise, right? Erected.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened before that? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego fell into the fiery furnace. So they were supposed to be falling before the thing that Nebuchadnezzar had arisen, had caused to arise. And their falling causes Nebuchadnezzar to arise in astonishment. And then they arise, right? In the flame. They stand up and walk around. So there's this very visual movement verbs painting a picture for you. What does he say? He stands up astonished. What does he ask these guys?
Aren't there three men?
Weren't there three? And they say, yes, of course, O King. You're always right.
You're never wrong.
Certainly.
And he's like, but I see a fourth person.
Yeah. And how does he describe this fourth person?
Looks like a son of the gods.
Yeah. Bar Elohim. Or Bar Elani. Bar means son, right? In Aramaic, like Simon Bar-Jonah, you guys remember that name? Simon, son of Jonah. Anytime you see Bar in the New Testament, it's son of so-and-so. Ben is son in Hebrew, that's why you have different. So. But I'm getting off track. I like languages, sorry.
Ben-Hur.
Yes, Ben-Hur,
except
son of Hur.
Ben-Hur,
don't like vocab.
Yeah.
Grammar is not the same thing.
I do like vocab. I just don't have time for vocab right now. So he looks like a son of the gods. Lots of speculation. Who is this guy walking around? What do you think? One who looks like a son of the gods. Who is it?
Maybe the son of the one God.
Maybe the son of God.
Squirrel.
Well, give me some other possibilities.
An angel.
An angel. Any other possibilities?
God himself.
God himself, all right.
Maybe
just some other dude.
Just fell
in
on accident.
Guys.
Hey, it's a possibility.
The grace around the three of them extended to this random person.
Just saw you guys.
And I join in.
Chilling.
The furnace is broken back here.
Maybe
really cold.
I'm going to throw this out there as a potential possibility. Maybe Satan, right? Angel of light.
True.
gotta cover all of our bases. And he's often associated with fire, right? So.
I'm gonna say that's a bad choice.
Yeah. What would be your contextual clues that that one's not the right answer?
They're still alive.
Yeah, there you go. The fact that they're still alive, the fact that they are clearly servants of the Most High God, Yahweh. Generally, Satan doesn't want him to get any kind of credit.
They wouldn't probably even be here if they were.
The two most common answers for this question are Jesus, pre-incarnate Christ, or an angel, a messenger. I go with the second one, an angel. I just don't see reason to actually say this is Jesus himself. And then, in support of this view, I cite Nebuchadnezzar's explanation later, which we haven't read yet. But verse 28, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants. And it's literally has sent a messenger, delivered his servants. It's just malach, the word for angel in Aramaic. I'm all for seeing Jesus where he is. I just...
Don't see it here.
Don't see it here. But I'm also not going to split a church over it. People want to believe this is pre-incarnate Christ, Jesus showing up in the Old Testament. Yeah.
So would you put a dash in Abednego here? Put it on the front?
Because I was going back and forth between ESV and NASB in my English readings, and NASB hyphenates and ESV doesn't.
And now you know how to pronounce it?
Yeah, in the Aramaic, it's actually two words, Abednego. So, sorry.
Because that's the important part of this lesson.
Quick question. Who gathers around to see who comes out of the fire?
All his boys.
Yeah, all the people who were bowing down and worshiping the golden idol. The prefects, the governors, the satraps, king's counselors. And what do they observe?
Fire had not had any power over the bodies.
No power over the bodies. The only thing that it had destroyed was what?
The strongmen.
Strongmen and?
What else? The bindings.
The bindings. The ropes. Nebuchadnezzar exerts all the force he can. He gets the strongest guys to tie them up as tight as he can. And it's the only thing that gets destroyed by this fire.
Or those two things.
The two symbols of Nebuchadnezzar's great might and wrath. Did we not cast four men bound into the flames, or three men bound into the flames, but I see four unbound walking around in the fire?
I like how Nebuchadnezzar was able to get close to the door of the burning fiery furnace.
Yeah. And this is actually just... Part of that is just... you could say, definitely, that... Protection of God, but also just the way fire works.
Yeah, it would have died down.
Heat rises, and so when you're throwing people in from the top of a furnace, it's a lot hotter up there than it is at the base of the fire at the entrance door, which is how the furnace.
Oh, Bethany signs.
But,
I thought it was an interesting way to put it.
To your point, no. And by the way, make sure we have a proper picture of the furnace. Babylonian furnaces would be like circular brick, right? Little archway opening in the base so that you could put fuel into. That's the door that Nebuchadnezzar approaches. And then a hole in the top so that the smoke and the heat can escape and you channel that heat in different places. Or you throw trash in from the top and burn stuff. So that's how it is. Nebuchadnezzar's here at the base. They were throwing him in at the top and they died. Nebuchadnezzar comes up to the door and looks in.
How's it still very hot?
Probably still very hot, yes. If you've ever been near a bonfire, it gets pretty hot when you get close to it. You have to step back.
That's what fire does.
Yeah.
What?
Fire tends to burn things.
What?
Unless you're Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego.
But yeah, it's...
In this situation.
Everyone who was worshipping the idol that comes around and sees the power of Yahweh, the true God.
Now wants to know what just happened.
And none of the things that should have been burned up, except for the symbols of Nebuchadnezzar's wrath and power. Verse 28, Nebuchadnezzar answered and said, Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants, who trusted in him and set aside the king's command. Literal translation of that would, who put their trust in him and changed the king's word, altered the king's words, altered the king's commands.
Violated the king's command.
That's good. And yielded up their bodies rather than serve and worship any god except their own god. Therefore, since they did this, I make a decree. Any people, nation, or language that speaks anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be torn limb from limb and their houses laid in ruins, for there is no other God who is able to rescue in this way. In ASV, I like the way they render the two therefores. What is it? What is, read verse 29 for me, Chris.
Therefore, I make a decree that any people, nation, or tongue that speaks anything offensive against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be torn limb from limb and their houses reduced to a rubbish heap, inasmuch as there is no other God who is able to deliver in this way.
So yeah, two things I like that. Any people, nation, or language, so the people who the command was given to worship the golden idol, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is the command given to them now?
Blaspheme against their God.
Yeah, and it's not worship the God.
It just speaks anything against him.
Don't speak anything against it, and the NHB renders it very well. Speaks anything offensive against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Anybody who says bad things about this guy, what's going to happen to him? Well, the same thing that I said would happen to the satraps who couldn't give me the dream. Torn limb from limb, houses.
Still hasn't quite gotten the one yet.
Yeah. Getting closer, right?
Getting there. You know, capitalized God now, so obviously there's some sort of respect given.
This God is definitely one of the gods.
Yeah.
It's a big one.
Big God.
It's the top God.
There's still these other guys that I still think are pretty cool.
That's the thing. It's progressively understanding the power of Yahweh.
And it's not his God yet. It's their God.
Exactly. It's their God. And the reason, in as much as there's no other God who's able to rescue in this way. I mean, he's obviously a really powerful God. First, he reveals a mystery in a dream. Second, he's able to trump my wrath. I threw everything I had at them. Strongest men, seven times hotter.
Turning on a little bit.
A little bit. And when we get to chapter 4, we're going to see them come all the way on. It's glorious. First-hand account of Nebuchadnezzar's.
It's kind of interesting that he's acknowledging this, because that would have been, like, a giant sign of weakness to admit that the king was not right in everything he's ever done. And for him himself to suggest that this God is even bigger than him.
Yeah.
It says a lot.
Yeah, he's not there yet.
Yeah, but he's getting there.
He's getting there. He's going to defend this God. Or at least anybody said anything bad about him, he's going to kill him. Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. I tell you, I looked all over for a reason as to why the names Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are used all throughout this section. I could not find anybody who even addressed it, and it bugged me. But I don't know why. If you guys think of a reason, I'm curious. Because we remember Daniel by his Hebrew name, Daniel.
Mm-hmm.
But Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, their Hebrew names get forgotten because their most famous story, their names are always rendered their Babylonian versions. And why that is, it might just be that the very first time their names are mentioned in this story, it's spoken by the Chaldeans who are trying to kill them, so they're gonna use the Babylonian names to try and talk them down and diminish the god Yahweh as much as possible. So for the sake of consistency throughout the story, they just use those names. That's the only possible reason I could think of. But I want to know why the proper theophoric names don't come back in the picture. But haven't come up with a really compelling reason yet, so by all means. One last point. The command not to blaspheme against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego's God is given to whom? Verse 29.
Wasn't it everyone?
specifically, what is it? Yes, it's everyone, but how do they communicate that?
You're talking about the any nation, the language part?
Yeah, people, nation, or language. Look back at verse 4. When the herald proclaimed, at the beginning of all this, the herald proclaimed,
people, nation, language.
Same groups of people. Remember, the Jews are included in this. The Jews are part of that. Nebuchadnezzar has to instruct even the Jews not to blaspheme their own God, because they were at the beginning of this story. Just as a reminder of just how long it takes them to get it. What all they have to go through.
What a loser Yahweh is.
Yeah, might we be protected from this same tendency to always run away, to always abandon the God who follows, pursues, protects, chastises, yes, but loves. Yeah, we're no better. We are the Jews in this story. We are the ones who do not stand up for Yahweh. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are the representatives of Christ, the one who does fulfill the law, who does follow the law, does not worship the other gods, earns our righteousness for us. And how do we partake? Well, by belief, by not blaspheming the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, but by believing. So, next week, we will look at Nebuchadnezzar's first-hand account. Let me see. I typed up essentially the breakdown for the future weeks. I think I broke it down into 9 more. Because when we get into chapters, particularly 8, 9, 10, and 11, they get a little bit dicey. So yeah, we're going to do chapter 4 over 2 weeks. But I would highly recommend, what we're going to do is we're going to look at verses 1 through 28 of chapter 4 next week. And then the following week, verses 29 through the end of the chapter, 29 through 37. But read all of chapter 4 before next week. And we'll go through the first half next week, and then the second half next week, and then we'll prep. We'll kind of have a little preview of chapter 5 after that. So that is where we're headed. How far over am I? 3 minutes? Okay, I can live with that. Questions, worries, concerns?
Mine says 4 minutes.
Mm-hmm. I have Apple, so I must be wrong. Alright. Are y'all liking Daniel? Is this good stuff?
No?
You kidding me? Worst book ever written.
Other than Nathan.
It's gonna get
even cooler.
Well, when we get to chapters 7 and 9, those are exciting chapters for 21st century believers. And
that's good.
Chapter 11 gets nice and confusing. Very, very hard to understand. So.
Excellent.
Yeah. Look forward to that.
It is not opposite day.
I will see you all next week here, one more week, and then switch it up.
Sounds good.
There needs to be like an opposite proof phrase to say when it actually is opposite day.
I'm too tired.
Anyway.